Okay, so doing this on Hashkafa, in Perkei Avos, the Parag Beis Mishnah Aleph. Okay, Parag Beis Mishnah Aleph. And as we're kind of doing it, it kind of relates to what we were learning. So it kind of relates to what we were doing, also Mitzvah Mitzvah, but it's really like, this is philosophical, so you know, it's not all halacha, but he kind of gives like a tam of the mitzvah in a sense. So it's kind of interesting. So, but you don't have to know, you don't have to have been in the shirim, it's separate. So Rabbi Omer, Ezu hi derech yishara shiyavar lo adam, what is the straight path that a person should choose? Kol shihi teferas lo oseha, v'teferas lo min adam. So that which will be like, teferas is like what, like an adornment, or like a majesty glorifying to the person who does it, it's teferas lo min adam. And it's tiferes to him from people. Okay, so let's see, the Rambam explains a little bit. So we can do this with the Parash of the Rambam. Okay. And I'm more interested in the second part of the Mishnah. The second, there's three parts really. I'm more interested in the second and also the third part, but I figure once we're here, maybe we can say a little bit about the first part also. So the Rambam says, Barlo, Baruki Derki Shara. So the straight, what is this straight path? Him hamaasim hatovim asher biarnu paragravi. Him hamaisim hamutzaim. So these are the good actions we spoke about in the fourth parak. I think it means the intro, which one prakim. There's four. There's eight prakim. The intro to Perkei Avos. So the fourth one, which is the middle path. Okay. So well, I'm assuming you know a little bit about the middle path, but okay. But based on the middle path, where you're in the mean of all your different emotions, all the different character traits. Not too much drawn towards one side, not too much drawn towards the other side, but somewhere like they call the golden mean. Okay, lefisha b'ahem, because through these character traits, so these actions, niknis la'adam b'nafsha techuna na'ala, so through them, a person will acquire in his soul a good composition, a high, right, elevated, a good composition, v'titav hanhaguso im b'nei adam. Okay, and it will also make good his dealings with people. Who amru teferes lo seva teferes lo min adam. So that's what it means. It's teferes for the person who does it, and for the other people. Okay. You're saying that's what's good. A person should choose the right. That's the path a person should choose. Okay, the middle path is good for the person. Yes, it helps bring him towards perfection, and it's also good for other people. Right, it's also good in terms of his interactions with other people. If the person's at the extremes or whatever, he's going to end up, more than likely, end up harming other people. But if the guy's in the middle, he'll be able to make good decisions and will be pleasant to do it for other people as well. Okay? It kind of makes sense, right? I mean, there's kind of a sense to this thing. Does anyone have a question? I was also wondering, just like, what's the point? Like, what's the main idea of this statement? Like, it sounds nice, but like, what's this chiddush, so to speak? You know? What's the path that a person should choose, that which is good for himself and for people? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, like, what's the import? What's his, what's the punchline here? What's Rebbe coming along and telling you to do? I mean, do something which is good for yourself and for other people? Okay? Sounds nice. It's almost like you don't need Rebbe to tell you that, you know? Right? Okay, so maybe this is kind of what Danny's getting at, but what's, it's really a different discussion. I mean, it's a whole thing in the wrong to go through the middle path. You know, what's the whole idea of the middle path? Right? Interesting in its own right. I kind of did it a few years ago. But from what I remember, the main idea of what I recall is that a person draws a person towards different sides, a different area, let's say in Taiva. So a person can be drawn towards Taiva, another person can be drawn towards like asceticism, the opposite of Taiva, right? Totally, right, ascetic, removal of all pleasure, right? So what it's saying is like a person has tendencies in them on both sides. Part of a person wants looking for pleasure, part of a person kind of feels guilty and is looking to feel I'm above that, you know, I'm a human being, I don't do that kind of thing, you know. There's like tendencies, in every midah there are tendencies in both ways in a person. And the thing is that neither of those tendencies is really good, per se. Because if you act in line with either tendency, you're going to make mistakes at times. Because every situation is a little bit different. And sometimes the rationality demands that you act one way, sometimes rationality demands you act a different way. Right? Depending on the circumstance. Circumstances are always different. And whether it's appropriate to follow a taiva or not to follow a taiva is dependent upon an intellectual assessment at a given time and place, whether this is appropriate or not appropriate. And so far as you have a leaning towards one side or towards the other side, then you're going to be impaired in your ability to honestly, clearly, rationally assess whether this is appropriate or inappropriate at this given moment. So because of that, the middle path is, the idea of the middle path is a person who is equally drawn on both sides. So he could emotionally, so to speak, neutral. Neutral, I mean, like being equally pulled towards both. So therefore, he could go this way, go that way. Emotionally, he doesn't have like a predilection, so to speak. Because there's a satisfaction on one side, a satisfaction on the other side. And therefore, what's going to decide which way he goes in any given instance is going to be rationality. Because his emotions are free, a certain freedom. A person is like compulsive towards one side, that's not the middle. Middle means where there's no compulsion towards one side or towards the other one, but you're free to go both ways. And a free person is a person who's emotionally free, is a person who's able to act with rationality and to honestly, clearly assess every single situation and therefore do what's best for him at every single moment. And similarly, he'll be able to assess in his interactions with other people. You know, if a person is towards one side, so he's going to act compulsively, trying to satisfy whatever internal drive he has, and generally people's internal drives don't match up with other people's internal drives. So if I'm compulsive about, I just act on lark, whatever comes to whatever my emotions draw me towards, then I'm not going to work well with people. With people, the way you have to work with people is you have to consider other people, consider all the different factors at your hand, yourself and others as well, and then be able to act intelligently in a way which is best taking into account your own interests and the interests of people around you. So the idea is that it's basically the middle path is a path which is where a person is conducive to rational decisions. And rational decisions are going to be best both for you and for everybody. And the compulsive decisions are going to be harmful to you and to everybody. Okay? But that's just the idea of the middle path. But I think the question is, what's the point of Rebbe? I think Rebbe's point is that I think psychologists, or I'm sure philosophers of society, or I don't know, someone who studied this stuff could tell me where they've seen this, but I know I've seen before is that, I think in psychology I've seen is that there's the eternal clash between like the good for the individuals and the good for the society. You know, there's like an intrinsic conflict in the world, okay, between the individual and society. Because what an individual wants is not what's good for the society. Right? An individual wants everything for himself. He wants all the women, all the food, all the everything for himself. But if ever you can't have a society like that. I mean, that's like a caveman or some, you know, slider. Basically, everyone's destroying everyone else. Just, you know. But if a man realizes that what's good for the world, for society at large, is if the individual gives up on his primitive desires, and he has to compromise his own wishes for the greater good. Okay, that's the idea of culture. Culture is like where you know, it's a civilization. It is where man collectively recognizes that if I go for my individual good, then no one's gonna be happy, and I'm gonna get into clashes, and all, you know, in the long run, it's not gonna be good for me. And therefore, the society, or certain intelligent people in society, realize that we can't just let people pursue their natural inclinations. We have to set up some sort of system of rules, laws, whatever it is. But it could be that that what the Mishnah Rebbe is saying is that in truth there is no real conflict. In truth, that's like, see, emotionally it seems that way. It seems like emotionally what's good for the person is infinite pleasure. What's good for society is control of pleasure, you know? And they're at odds. The good for the person is at odds with the good for society. The good for the person is his stuff for him. The good for society is stuff for everybody. But the thing is that in truth, there's no real conflict. Because what's good for the person is the middle path, is rationality. It's not really all taiva. See, if all taiva was the good for a person or an individual, then you can have a conflict because you can't have everybody having all taiva. But if in fact the good for a person is the middle path of taiva and a moderate amount of taiva, then for instance there's no reason why everyone can't have moderate amounts of taiva. There's enough taiva to go around for everybody. You know, so so the idea of if a person has a true appreciation of what the good is for a man, for individuals, they'll realize that it is a moderate thing, and it is something which is the life of the middle path, is a life which is the best life for the individual, and it's also the best life for society. And there really is no clash at all. So therefore, it's pasha. That's the what path should a person choose? The path which is best on all counts. There is no person feels like the natural dilemma man finds himself is that he has to decide, should I do what's best for me, or should I do what's best for the greater good? You know, that's, and you have to choose. But Rebbe's saying, which path should a person choose? The path which is best for both. There is no conflict. It's not like there's a conflict and you have to decide which one is going to suffer. You know, and I have to make one suffer for the other one. There is no conflict at all. It kind of reminds you of like conflict. The person feels like, should I go for this world or should I go for Olam Haba? You know, for the world to come. Like in most religions, I guess that's the way it's perceived. It's like, if you want to enjoy this world or you want to suffer in this world in order to have the world to come. The Torah holds as the no. The Tov Lach Olam Hazeh, right, it's good for you in Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. Right, so it says the Torah, is the life of the Torah, life which the Torah prescribes, is good on all accounts. And there is no decision to make. That's what Rebbe's point. That's what Rebbe's pointing out. He's like coming in, knowing that man faces this dilemma, and he's telling you it's not. He's not resolving the dilemma. He's showing you how there is no dilemma. I think it's worth thinking into because I think it has meaning on many levels. I mean, just in general, I think a person feels that he has to, so to speak, take one for the team. You know, like I'll compromise my own best interest because I realize there's a greater good. You know. But that's a mistake. That's not really a Torah idea. Your own best interests is the greater good. That's also your own best interests. It's not like you're sacrificing anything. Well, you're sacrificing your short-sighted, instinctual, you know, emotional opinion about what the good is, what's good for you. But if you think into it, you realize that's not really, you're not sacrificing anything. You're simply being intelligent about what's good for you. And that's also good for everybody else. It's also good for society. It's just the Torah's not asking a person to sacrifice. It's asking him to be intelligent about how he looks out for his own best interests. If you did have to sacrifice, that's a hard decision. A person feels like I have to sacrifice. So I'm stuck with this conflict. Eternal conflict. Should I go with myself or should I worry about other people? After all, I should care about other people, but I care about myself, but I care about other people. So it's like a person is to be a tug of war between those two things. Unbelievable, you know, happiness a person can have when they could realize that those are one and the same. You don't have that conflict. That's like a source of turmoil for people, is that conflict. Is that all day long they are being torn between those two poles. One minute they're something themselves, then they feel guilty, they're something about people, and they're something themselves, they're about people, and they're constantly at a war. But when a person really internalizes that fact that there is no at war, when you do for other people, you're not harming yourself. On the contrary, that is what's best for yourself. I mean, you could say it, but you have to think about it. You have to kind of see why this path is the best for you. I mean, emotionally, you don't feel that way, so you have to think into it. That's a different discussion. I mean, you have to think into why it's best. You know, it's a different discussion why it is best for you to be a middle path and to, you know, but I mean, you probably, you know, to some extent see it. But the more you see it, the more you realize, the more you solve your conflicts. I mean, your conflicts are not, you're not saying, should I give up what's good for me? Should I follow the Torah or should I do what I want to do? You should want to follow the Torah. If you understood the Torah and you understood yourself, that's what you want to do. Should I follow what I want, I know is good for me and is... I want to do because it's good for me, or should I follow what's bad for me? But I am being fooled into thinking it's good for me, and, you know, because of my short-sighted instinctual nature. Yeah. But I don't mean it's good for you, like in... I don't just mean good for you because you're following Hashem, or because... I mean, like, it's good for you just in terms of studying man's psyche, in terms of... Not just because philosophically it's good. I mean, it'll make you happy. It's in line with man's nature. You know what I mean? Like, anyone can say, well, it's good for you to follow God. Every religion, I'm sure, will say that. But it means, they mean it's painful, but it's like the greater good. But I don't think it's saying that. It means it's good for you on all fronts. And the following the path of rationality will actually make you happier. It's good for you. You know what I mean? I don't know if this is necessarily what's in the mission, but it's good for you in this world. It's good psychologically. It's good for you for the world to come. It's just good for you all around. It's not... You'll be a happier person. You're not going to end up being depressed in this world, but it's good for you because, hey, the next world, it all pays off. That's not the idea. It is that it's really good for you in terms of your basic day-to-day happiness and your basic ability to actually... And the simple level, because the middle path is a path where you can be rational. And you're going to be happy if you can be rational. If you act impulsively and you make irrational decisions, you're going to pay for them. Bad decisions have consequences. The reason that rational decisions are things which are actually good, and you'll be able to enjoy the benefits. So on the simplest level, the middle path is the path where you're able to be rational. Rationality is always going to get you what you're looking for. And you think through where things can get you. Once you're acting based on an impulse, so now you're not really acting based on a long-sighted view, you're acting based on a momentary view, but life is longer than the moment. So you can end up making decisions which are based upon a momentary feeling, which is subsides, and then you're stuck with the consequences of those momentary feelings. So anything anyone realizes, if you can make good, thought-out decisions, you're going to end up being a happier person. So that doesn't just mean you're going to get a better share in the world to come. It means in this world. Of course, you're also going to get a better share in the world to come. Not to minimize that, but... So that's that. Okay? So that's that part of the Mishnah. Let's go further. Okay, now, it's always interesting I haven't learned through that much of Pirkei Avos. Okay, kind of whenever, the little bit I've done, I always wonder this in these Mishnayos. Like, you often have these Mishnayos where you have one Tana, let's say, saying three things. Somehow like a theme, right? He used to say these things. I always wonder if they're related or not. Is there like some picture? Or is it just Rebbe having to say three things? I don't know. I don't know what the rule is for that. I don't know. I haven't seen enough of it to know whether they're all. I know at least once I've seen unification, but I'm just throwing it out there. But it seems on the surface, new topic. But I don't know. Maybe by the end of the day we can see if they're unified or not. I don't know of any unification, but just throwing it out there. So he says like this. So now back to the Mishnah. He says, "V'havei zohir b'mitzvah kala k'mitzvah chamura." Person should be careful about a light mitzvah, just like he's careful about a stringent mitzvah. She'ina te'yodeh matan scharen shel mitzvos, because we don't know the reward which is given for the mitzvos. We don't know the reward, so therefore you should be equally careful in every mitzvah. Okay. So the Mishnah, there's an apparent contradiction here, no? What's the apparent contradiction?
On the one hand, it's identifying certain mitzvot as being kala and chamura.
Right.
But then it's saying, you have no idea which one
right.
is.
Right, exactly. Right, and if it's saying is kala and chamura, what does it mean kala and chamura? You think it's like somehow more significant or less significant. So it says, yeah, but the reason why you should be careful of them all is because we don't know the rewards of them. So in what sense are they kala? Which sense are they chamura? Why are they kala? And who's to say that this is more stringent or more lenient? All we know is mitzvah, so we don't know anything. There's no rankings given. So what does that mean, mitzvah? You're careful in a stringent and in a weak mitzvah. Right? It's not intrinsically a problem. You could say weak in strength has nothing to do with reward. But what does it have to do with? Okay, so let's see the Rambam. Okay? What? Yes, that's true. It sounds like if you did know the Schar Mitzvos, then it would be a good idea to be more careful about the stringent Mitzvos and less careful about the lesser Mitzvos. Right. Why? Because we go by the rewards? Is that what we hold? Is that the main thing is the rewards? And just go, Right. Sure, that's a good question also. Okay, so let's see the Ram. Okay. He says, So then the Mishnah says, it's appropriate to be careful with a mitzvah that you think is lenient. If you're going Simchas HaRagel, like being happy on Ragel, on Yantav, the Lamida Tashma Kodesh, and learning Hebrew. Okay? Mitzvah, I guess?
Yeah?
I don't know. It's a light one, so no one knows about it. But I don't know. I'm not sure. What's that? Rashi has it? That's a mitzvah to learn Lashon Kodesh? Where? On email this Mishnah or just on somewhere else? Well, he quotes here Sifri Parshas Ekev. Maybe that's what it is. I didn't look that up. But maybe it's Sifri and Parshas Ekev. Maybe it says that. Yeah? Yeah? Rashi on the Parsha?
When is the key?
On the on Shema? Okay. Yeah, so he's saying is, so he says that you should be careful with a mitzvah that you think is light, like Simchas HaRegel and learning Hebrew, with a mitzvah that is Ba'erachum Rasa, and a mitzvah whose stringency is explained. Kigon Hamila, Be'atzitzis, Rishchitas HaPesach. So Mila and Pesach, where is it explained there, Chumra?
Kares,
right? Presumably, because it means you get Kares for them, right? You don't do it, you get Kares. And Tzitzis, where is it explained as Chumra? So I'm not sure, but I think, maybe because it says, like, Urisim also is Chartem as Kol Mitzvos Hashem. You see the Tzitzis, and it reminds you of all the Mitzvos. So that kind of sounds important, you know? Right, it's like, so to speak, this like brings you to doing all the mitzvahs. Mantisku asim is kol mitzvah side. You say, right, it just sounds like it's talking about it. Like, this mitzvah is like fundamental, foundational to all other mitzvahs. It sounds like it's like, it doesn't say that by like put up a fence on your roof. So this way I'll do all the mitzvahs. I mean, each mitzvah is an individual mitzvah. But tzitzis is somehow like a reminder and it brings a person to all the mitzvahs. So it sounds like that's something very significant about that mitzvah. Okay? So what's the important word that the Rambam is? How's the Rambam seemingly answering the question we said, the Simin Stira? And before we go further, Choshvimba. Right? He says that, but he says, it's kind of contradictory, because he says Choshvimba, and then he says Nespai Racham Rasa. But Choshvimba, I mean, if you just read that, it sounds like it doesn't mean actually a light mitzvah or a stringent mitzvah, because we don't know what a light mitzvah or a stringent mitzvah is. That's the whole point. But it means that there's a certain mitzvahs you feel, you think, are lenient. You think you're lenient, like Simchas HaRegel. You feel like, okay, it's a mitzvah, but it's not a very religious feeling mitzvah. I mean, you're just drinking wine and eating meat, you know. Somehow it doesn't feel like getting a lot of star for that one, right? Somehow emotionally, you don't feel, it doesn't feel like it's so important. Or learning Hebrew. So I don't know. I guess that doesn't sound so important to you, you know, it's a mitzvah. So, but somehow, I guess you don't feel like you gain some great religious satisfaction by learning language. It just sounds like this tedious thing. You're not really accomplishing anything. I guess it is a mitzvah, but you know, it doesn't feel so great. But so whatever, saying certain mitzvahs you feel are lenient mitzvahs. And there are other mitzvahs whose chumrah is explained in the Torah. And therefore you feel, maybe it means, and therefore you feel like these are very, very important mitzvahs. Aye, but so does that mean they're important? What does it mean? It sounds like it is in the Torah that it's chumrah. Right? It doesn't sound like that it is chumrah. This is, why is he just saying, in the light ones, you just feel are light. But these actually explains the Chumrah in the Torah. So it sounds like he's saying the Torah does make them stringent. Okay, so let's leave that question. Okay, so therefore, so why should I be careful? So be careful between the mitzvahs I think are lenient and the mitzvahs whose star is Chumrah is explained in the Torah. V'nosan tam l'kach. The reason is, she'enat yudei matan schar shem mitzvahs. Because you don't know the matan schar mitzvahs. And you don't know the rewards of mitzvahs. And the explanation is like I'm going to explain. So the Torah has positive commandments and negative commandments. Okay. Mitzvahs lo sasei, the negative commandments are pir shakasav ha'onesh l'kalachas mehem zosimat. The Torah explains the onesh, the punishment for them, except for a few. Almost all of them. It explains v'onesh v'miktsasam misos. Some of them you get put to death. We saw some kares, some of them you get kares. Misa b'nei shavayim. Umalkas. So some of them God will kill you, some of them you get whipped. Umin ha'onshim, and from the own, the punishments, yadanu is kalam mitzvah, so I say, ma'amihen isur ha'chamu, ma'amihen isur ha'chamu, ma'amihen isur ha'chamu. So you could deduce from these punishments which are worse sins and which are less bad. There are 8 levels. So skila is the most stringent of the mises pas in the skila. So any sin which is immediate, which is skila, you know it's very, very stringent. And then herig, and then chenek, and then kares, and then mishnayim, and then malchus, and then lavim which don't have malchus. So basically you have 8 different levels which based on the onshin you can derive in the negative commandments the levels of the stringency of these averas. So from these levels you could know the stringency of the avera and its lightness. Aval mitzvos asay, but by positive commandments, lo pir star kalachas mam, mahu lefnei Hashem, doesn't tell us the reward, what it is before God. So that we would know which ones are chamor, which ones are stringent, and which ones are light. Elatziu, the kind of replani, but the replani just said to do this in this mitzvah. Lo di star is mam, yosu gar lefnei Hashem, but didn't tell us which one has a greater star before God. Right? Ulafikach roi l'shtachel an kulam. And therefore you should be involved, you should be involved in them all equally. V'yisod ha'zeh amro, say mitzvah patam mitzvah. That's why we say, mitzvah patam mitzvah, l'lov chanabeh mitzvah sikbal mitzvah averas. You don't ever rank and weigh and say, listen, I'm doing one mitzvah, but this is a really unimportant mitzvah, and there's another really important mitzvah coming, so I should give up the light one for the stringent one. Why don't you say that? Sounds like a reasonable idea to do. Just because we don't know light and stringent. So therefore, bottom line is all you left with this is mitzvah. Also, you can't pass over a mitzvah. If a mitzvah presents itself to you, don't pass over from it in order to do a different mitzvah. Why? Because we don't know the rankings. So since we don't know the rankings, what's the reason to do that? Just do whatever mitzvah you got in your hand. Okay.
Is that really true? Aren't there
hierarchies
in certain cases?
I don't think so. For instance,
I guess
I guess that's true. That's a good question. I mean, Certain times they have like Zeres HaKasos, certain things get pressed. The general principle is that without a specific limud to the contrary, the principle is that we don't rank mitzvahs. Even when you do have, it's a good question, I mean, when you have exceptions, like mitzvah is an exception. But it doesn't say because it's more chamor, it's not clear. I mean, you could try to deduce because it's more important. But, I don't know, it's a good question. Right, that if you would leave one for the other, that would mean that, but even that, I'm not sure if you leave the thing, maybe you do, it's a good question. Yeah, I don't know how to answer that question, it's a good question.
When he says, Avam mitzvah sasel.
That's a good question, so Mike asks, so it says, mitzvah say, lo pir star kalachas man, doesn't explain the star of all of them, in order so we know which ones are chumra, which ones are lenient. Does that mean it explains the schar of some? So, I mean, it kind of does explain the schar of some, right? Like, Kaveh, Kiveh, Sevich, Elvan, Yerichan, Yamecha, Kiveh, it says it, right? Also on, by Shlach, Kiveh, Shlach, Khan, by the bird, right? Also says you live a long life. Certain places it does say it. Like, I guess maybe you have a Kares, kind of, you can argue, is like that, right?
You had two of those kind.
Well, I guess, if you'd somehow be able to rank them. But I don't know how you make these rankings anyway. So what's worse? What's more important, kares or a long life? Yeah. I mean, they're kind of in the same ballpark. But I think the point is that even if you have certain ones, and I think this is the Nisbara from Rasa also, just because the Torah explains to you how important the mitzvah is, but if it doesn't tell you how important the other mitzvahs are, so you don't know. So the kares, you don't even get a long life. Okay, well, what do you get for putting a fence on your house? That doesn't say. Maybe a long life. You're more than better than law. You just don't know. There's no ranking. So by lavim, every lav has a punishment. Or if it doesn't, it means it's more lenient. But I mean, in general, the Torah, for whatever reason, the Torah saw fit to explain the chumrah of certain mitzvahs. But if you don't have an overarching system where the overwhelming majority of them have explanations, so then you say, well, we don't know, we don't have a rank, and we don't compare. See, by the law, then the overwhelming majority have onshim. So then you can deduce the ones that don't have an onshim because they're more lenient. I mean, because you see, it's not the Torah doesn't mention onshim, it does mention onshim. So this doesn't have an onshim, must be lenient. But in general, the Torah doesn't mention onshim on the reward for asayis, for positive mitzvahs. So now, you can't say, well, if Torah didn't say that I get a great reward, it must be I don't. No, it very rarely does it. It's why the Torah does it sometimes. Okay, for whatever reason, the Torah saw fit to do that. But it doesn't necessarily mean that means this is more stringent than anything else. Maybe not. Maybe the other ones are more stringent. Torah could have different reasons why it decided to mention the reward by certain things and not by other things. Right? So that could have asked what he means, that you'd have to explain the reward of all of them, or most, overall majority at least, in order for you to be able to have a ranking, you know. I mean, it's true, if you had two of them and they had like a scale, you know, then maybe you could do that. But I don't really have that, you know.
It seems like...
Basically means the system at large we don't have. We don't have a system. We don't know anything. I mean, you could have certain particulars, but you can't construct the system. I mean, from the onshim, I mean, you have a whole system. You have many different levels. You have sugyas and shas which discuss all these different things, and they get into these. I mean, you have so much data and so much information. You start trying to construct a system, and you can figure things out. And you see the Torah clearly gave it to us in that manner. But in Aseis, the Torah kind of left us without anything like that. So now we don't know. So given that we don't know, so all we can do is say, okay, be careful about everyone. Right?
What's the difference?
So that's good. That he's asking is that it sounds like intrinsically there's nothing wrong with rankings. You see, by Los Angeles, apparently there are rankings. And it would seem like he's saying is you should be more careful by the stringent ones than the light ones. Right? It seems like that's a fair deduction. Right? And by essays also you would rank them, which we don't know. But it seems like it's an appropriate idea to rank things based upon their reward or not. Right? Sounds that way, we just don't know, so we don't know how to do it. Right? So somehow, and that's not so much of a question, but it's, you know, somehow you don't think like that, you don't think like that. We think we do the mitzvahs. What do you mean? Just do all the mitzvahs? I mean ranking, but it's more important, less important way to do the mitzvahs, you have to do them all. But you do see, halachically, there is a thing like that, let's say by Los Asayas. So there's a thing the Ramban holds, is that if you violate, let's say, Shabbos, so you always have to bring karma. It's a shogeg. By accident, you have to bring karma. Karma chatas. But if you violate just the regular law, let's say you eat pig, shogeg. So there's no chatas. It's only by krisis. It's only by chamuros, by sins which you get killed or karis for. So, and I think the Ramban says is because those are stringent of arrows, and therefore a person has to be on guard about them. So such that if he does them by accident, that means he failed in his responsibility to keep those mitzvahs, because you have to be especially careful, not just to not violate Shabbos, but you have to be careful not to violate Shabbos. You have to guard Shabbos. And guarding Shabbos means don't even get yourself into a shogeg situation. So therefore, if you do it by shogeg, you have to bring a karban. You have to bring karban. But by regular law, which isn't as chamor, so he says, you're not chayav to be that careful. You can't eat pig. If you somehow accidentally do it and you weren't careful, there's no, that's not a sin. You're not responsible for that. And you don't have to bring karban. So there's an idea, you see there's an idea of a greater care by greater averos. And there's rankings of averos and they demand more or less eros, because since it's a more important thing, you have to be more concerned about it. I mean, that makes sense. If you have a system of law and you have stringent, you know, more important principles, you have to be much more careful about it. You have to be careful about not killing somebody than about not crossing a red light. You know, not going to stop, whatever it is, you know. So it does make, there is in a certain sense in a legal system, there are levels. So it seems that it's saying that if we knew the levels in Nasayas, is it saying that there is no different levels of rewards? Or is it saying that they all have the same reward? No. Just saying we don't know them. But it seems like in reality, in truth, there really are different levels. It's just that we don't know them, so therefore we can't really act upon them. Which brings up the question, why don't we know them? right? I mean, it's a kind of a funny question. It's like a why question. But if you're saying there are different levels of rankings, and they are more important than less important, and if we knew the levels of more important and less important, it would be appropriate to act in accordance with that ranking. So why the Torah leave us in the dark about that? And it's kind of like, really, you should be careful about these things. But it's like, well, sorry, I'm not telling you where how to do it. I don't know, it's kind of funny, right? The Rambam doesn't tell you, the Mishnah doesn't tell you, but it's somewhat bothersome. If you're saying it, that in truth, really, it's appropriate, you should be ranking them differently, and it's just that we were kind of uninformed about that. I don't know, something's bothersome about it. Yeah. It's true, I mean, I guess it's saying is you can't figure it out. See, because I guess to figure it out, you'd have to really, I could see saying is that this is beyond really human capability to figure these things, the rankings. Because in order to do it, you'd have to know the full objective of the mitzvah. So even if you could give a particular benefit of a mitzvah, you could know, you could study, and you could, one rishon could give a reason or a benefit of a mitzvah. But in order to rank them, you have to know the full depth, every and all. I mean, a mitzvah could be good for a person on 10 different levels. I mean, God designed the mitzvahs in a way which talks the entire personality, and we could, I mean, they see even the rishon give different, mafarshim give different benefits of different mitzvahs. So in order to rank them, it seems to be you have to know everything about the mitzvah and how it affects the person. And then you have to know about man and what's more important, less important. It just sounds like to be able to make these judgment calls seems to be too much. Yeah, but by the negative ones, God did reveal them. Although it is interesting, because that being said, the question is, which one's more chomer, skila or sreifa? Right, stoning or burning? So the Gemara tries to prove which one's more chomer by picking the averos and showing which avero which one gets and trying to rank the averos. So it does seem like the Gemara holds there is a way for us to try to. I mean, that's machloka. It turns out it's machloka tanah. But there is a discussion about it. But at least we have somewhat of a given, some givens. But just to construct a system out of thin air, what's more chomer, less chomer, it just seems like that's really possible. Seems that way. Yeah, that's true. Then he's asking the question, how do you necessarily go by punishments? Punishments are only one framework. Like the Rambam in the Mora talks about punishments. There are a lot of different factors. Punishments are there for deterrence, let's say. So certain things need more of a deterrent than others. There are a lot of different factors about punishment. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's worse. It could just mean that societally you need more of a, you know, it's more of a risky type of a thing. More people get drawn into it, so talk about how to make a less stronger punishment. Why is that necessarily the framework to determine what's more important or less important? Right? There are different factors in punishments. Like for Lashon Hara, there's no punishment. Right? I guess it's Tzara'as. But it's not in this rankings. I mean, in terms of Allah, there's no onesh. But Chazal say if a person's about Lashon Hara, is Ein L'Chayik Olam Haba. So I mean, it doesn't mean it's not it's a lenient sin. So for whatever reason, like certain things, the aimbot doesn't have an action. So you don't punish it as an action. Does that necessarily mean it's not important? So that's a good question. Why are we going by the punishments? Okay, good question. Okay. So let me read a little further the Mishnah. Okay. So there's one other part of the Mishnah which seems to contradict us. So the Mishnah then says, V'av mechashev hefsid mitzvah k'neged schar. A person should calculate the loss of a mitzvah compared with its reward. V'schar avera k'neged hefseda. And the reward of an avera against its loss. So what does that mean? So the Rambam explains. V'omar achar kach, and then the Mishnah says, V'afal pishal nisabar erech adifus mitzvah l'gabe achares, even though it's not explained the values of which mitzvah is better than other ones. There is a way to evaluate it. There is a way. Even though we don't really know rankings, there is a way to figure out rankings. Like a backhanded way that you can sneak a peek into the rankings. Okay? V'hu, shekol mitzvah zaseh sh'ata motze shechayv es over aleh achiv chamor teda shebhivish tar gadol. He says certain mitzvah zaseh is that if you violate it, then your certain assays have violations associated with them. And if in that violation you get a very serious onesh, then you'll know that in doing that mitzvah, you get a great reward. Okay, Hamashal was a here's an example. So four aset. Mila, Karban Pesach, resting on Shabbos and putting up a fence on your roof. Okay? Ela, right? So those are all mitzvah aset. Ela, Shechayev is osim alach v'shabbos kila. If you don't do the aset of Shabbos, then you're violating the los aset of doing malach on Shabbos and we stone you. Right, and if you don't do, you knock out Mila or Karban Pesach, you get Karis. But if you put something dangerous in your house, you don't put up a fence, you leave a dangerous thing in your house, lav. It's just a regular lav. So therefore you can figure out that the reward of resting on Shabbos is greater than that of Mila. Because, again, because you're not resting, you get stoned. Not doing Mila, you get Karis. And the reward of Mila is greater than putting up a fence. Because not doing Mila gives you karis, not putting up a fence just gives you a lav. That's what it means. You could calculate the loss of a mitzvah corresponding with its reward. You could figure out its reward from its loss. What you get if you violate it, you could figure out what you get if you fulfill it. Okay? And he says, similarly, if you want to know the reward of an Avera, if you don't do an Avera, you know what's your reward for not doing an Avera? He says, you know the punishment of doing an Avera. But what's the reward of refraining from doing an Avera? Well, the Torah doesn't tell us the reward of refraining from doing an Avera. He says, but you can tell. If there's an Avera where the punishment is very strict, then the reward for refraining from it is equally great. Because it says, if a person sits and refrains from doing an Avera, you get a reward as if you did a mitzvah. That's a good thing. Okay, that's different. The thing is that since in punishments you have rankings of how bad the averas are, you also thereby could deduce the rankings of your reward for not violating the avera. Okay, but back to the positive assays. So this is basically the Mishnah saying is that you really don't know rankings of assays, and therefore you have to be careful in all them. But we do know a little bit of a way to rank them, because certain assays happen to be that if you don't do the assay, then there's a punishment. And if there are punishments, so then you could compare the associated punishments. And you can deduce the strictness of the assay from the of two assays, the relative strictness of two assays from the severity of the punishments of their associated violations. Right? You can't do it for all mitzvahs, but some mitzvahs you could. Right, a lot of mitzvahs, like lulav. What happens if you don't do lulav? There's no associated violation, so you don't know. But by some of them you could. So this is funny, right? Problematic. It sounds like contradiction. On the one hand, he's saying there's no way to know the mitzvahs, we don't know the rankings. Now he's saying, oh, but there is some way to know the rankings. For instance, you don't say Yosef Misapata Mitzvah doesn't apply by these because we know there are rankings. Right? I mean, it's across the board. We don't know. I mean, why is it? It sounds like he's talking on both sides. The first thing, we don't know rankings. And he says, but there is a way to know the rankings. So don't say we don't know the rankings. Say we don't know the rankings of some things. Sounds like the contrary points. Why we don't know? No way to rank the mitzvahs. We don't know the rankings. Oh, but sometimes we could. Sometimes we could figure it out. So, like, which one is it? Do we not know the rankings? Or we do know the rankings. Or we should just say we know some rankings. Shouldn't that be the point? It's like the answer. Even though we don't know the rankings, we do know there is a way to know the rankings. So just say the second thing. We only know some rankings. It's true. It's a good question. Who cares about all these rankings? I mean, what's the punchline? So what do I need to know about all these? I know the rankings. It doesn't have any nafkamina. You see, Yosef Mitzvah supplies across the board. So what there is a way. If you want to know a little bit of rankings, you could know. Okay. So why would I want to? Am I supposed to know this? Is it supposed to affect me in any way? Also, it says the reward for refraining from doing an avera. So if you want to know the rankings, there's a way to figure out the rankings. Okay. Well, am I supposed to be doing this? Like, what's the point of all this? Who cares? All right. Okay, that's a good question. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, so let's try to work to get into this a little bit, I guess, tomorrow. Okay? So again, I guess we'll aim for this time, for 4:55. 4:55, 5 o'clock, basically. Okay? So we'll start Skyping. So try to have your Skype on at 4:55. This way we can just get it started. Because these things always take time, but, you know. Like, I want to start, I want to actually be started by 5 o'clock, you know. So, but try to, it's easier if you're Skyped out, you're signed on Skype earlier. It just makes things easier. Okay, have a good one, everybody.